Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to Season 2 of the Wild Tales Podcast. I'm Jason Fox, and I'm very pleased to say we have a good long Season 2 of the podcast coming up for you, featuring some excellent guests in the coming months. Thanks to everyone who has listened and subscribed so far. I've been blown away by the response. The podcast is presented by The Book of Man, and I'm really excited to be working with them again. Now, obviously, we're in the midst of the coronavirus crisis, which is a worrying and difficult time for everyone. Hopefully we can give you decent advice and a bit of relief from it with the podcast. It just so happens that I'm in lockdown with Ollie Ollerton, which is quite handy as I have my first guest right here. No doubt you know Ollie from SAS Who Dares Wins, and we get stuck into the new series and some of the celebs. But we are also here to have a chat about his career in the military, his early life, and what the outdoors means to him. Right, here I am. I'm in the room with the man, the myth, the one and only Ollie Ollerton. Just quickly before we start, we have got some brand new kit. We're in a designated room now, designated for geezers only. We've got decks in here, and we've got the brand new podcast kit. So if anything doesn't sound right, it's because we're on our own without experts and we are absolutely clueless. But anyway, that's the caveat done for if things go drastically wrong. Exactly. Right. Okay. So obviously this is, as I've already alluded to, it's the beginning of season two. It's episode one. It's a big deal. We've got a bigger deal in Ollie Ollerton, and we are going to be firstly talking about the situation we're all in, just to sort of like get it out there to see how we're doing and how everyone else is. So myself and Ollie have been in lockdown together. We made that decision before lockdown was implemented. We were away together. We travelled around the globe pretty much together, and we had business to be getting on with. So we decided to take it upon ourselves to co-locate up at Ollie's, loads of space, loads of stuff to get done, and that's what we're doing. And that is why we're actually able to do Ep 1 of Series 2 together, basically in person. So we're both here looking at each other. I don't think the rest of them are going to be like this. I think they're going to be done remotely. But anyway, mate, how have you found lockdown?
I don't want to sit here and start this podcast by saying how brilliant it's been for us on lockdown, because I know there's so many people out there that are suffering and having a hard time of it. And all I'd say is that we're in a pretty blessed position, because we, you know, about 12 months ago, as you know, I moved up to Shropshire. And there's a lot of open space around here. We're quite isolated anyway. So we've kind of got a good deal. But like I say, I mean, you know, I do spare a thought for the people that aren't in as fortunate circumstances. But, you know, we've got into a routine. We could have not done the things we've done. I mean, the reason we were actually sat in this room is because of the situation, isn't it? You know what I mean? The reason we made this room.
That is right. Just to enlighten people, we're in a room that's in Ollie's garage. So his garage is split into two. One is a gym, well equipped. It was part of the sort of magnetism I felt towards this place.
Not me.
And the second bit, this room that we're in, was absolute. It was a state, to say the least. But because of lockdown, Ollie, we got motivated, cleared it out, decked it out, decorated. And there's an awful lot of technical equipment in here. So, yeah, going back to Ollie and the fact that lockdown, we've basically turned it into a positive, or Ollie definitely has turned it into a positive. I've been watching from the sidelines all the DIY he's been doing, and no doubt when it's over, everything will need rebuilding. I'm not too sure how. anyway, but before we move off the subject of lockdown, mate, Ollie, have you got any advice for listeners to cope with this situation? Because there's a lot of anxiety out there about jobs, money, and everything else. You know, the usual things that are stressful about life. But with lockdown and the fact that no one knows what it looks like and how long it goes on for,
yeah,
is there anything that you can, any tidbits that people can take away from you to go on?
Yeah, I mean, I could sit here all day and give you recommendations of things to do, which basically are just enforcing the things that we talk about anyway when it's not a lockdown situation. But I really think, you know, if people started adopting the things we suggest right now, I think they've got a perfect opportunity to get into a disciplined way of life that they can carry forward for them. So the thing is, at the moment, there will be a lot of anxiety, like you said. There will be a lot of questions about people's jobs, where they go from here. And the thing is, you really have to start thinking, what can I know this has been said a lot and people are starting to recognize this, but what can you control? You know, if you start to list down the things that you can control, or think about a list of things that are bothering you at the moment, and then actually choose from that list what you can control, because if you can't control it, there's certainly no point worrying about it at the moment. So there's that in itself, and you know, just have a it's almost like a situational triage, isn't it? You know, you're actually really just focusing on the things that really matter and you can have an influence on. The other things I strongly advise, and I've got to admit as well, you know, I've let it slip a bit because there is less structure to our days than there usually is, but you must have a routine. And that routine, that means you take yourself to the day. You don't just sit there allowing the day to come to you. You dominate. And that, you know, I strongly suggest people have some kind of mindfulness practice. And that can be as simple as reading. You know, that can be simple as, well, not simple, but because it's hard to get into, but a bit of meditation. Meditation, don't get freaked out by that. That's just sitting down with yourself. You know, that's sitting with your own thoughts. That's just mindfulness, you know, focused attention. Some intentions. And then one thing that is so important, and I know it's a massive part of our daily routine, and we certainly know the effect of when it's, you know, when we don't have time to do it, and that's exercise. Exercise, you know, plenty of times you've said to me, Foxy, you know, I'm like, oh God, there's loads of stuff going on. It's like that. And your mind wants to say, you haven't got time to go out and do some exercise. You haven't got time. But the best thing you can do is go and do some exercise. It clears your head. It gives you more focus, clarity, and sets you off on a much better, you know, you come back to your workload and it's just you're a lot more clearer. So really the answer to the question is make sure that you have your own structure, because the scaffolding of everyday life has fallen down doesn't mean you have to.
Exactly. I totally agree with Ollie Ollerton there. Right. Now we will move away from the situation we're all in, and we'll move on to Ollie himself. Now, before we do that, I'm going to apologise. This podcast is going to jump around a little bit because I want to make it exciting. I don't really need to do that because of the person sat in front of me, but I'm going to try and mix it up a little bit. But first of all, we're going to start with, when did we first meet?
You know, I was asked this question the other day, and I was trying to define when it was, and I think it was either 1998?
I actually think it was more around, properly meeting was more around the 97 mark. 96, end of 96, 97.
Yeah, the other day I said it was 96, and then I thought I might have been a bit early on that one. But bottom line is, it was a long time ago.
It was. But let me, I met Ollie, but the only thing that the first memory of Ollie that sticks in my head was actually not the first time I met him for some reason, but it was we were both in the States, in the US. We were staying at this base that was in the middle of nowhere in the desert, but there was drink available. So on your off days, you could have a drink at night. And I came back in down the corridor that basically you took down into the accommodation where everyone was staying in these dormitories. And all I saw was two people completely dressed in bin liners. But like, but it wasn't just they'd put them on haphazardly. They'd made suits, full body suits, enclosed the head as well. And they looked like a couple of moon monkeys, sort of like bimbling down the corridor. It was a bit of a freaky thing to see. And that was Ollie Ollerton. And the other guy was a bloke called Russ. But that is my first memory of you. I had to get that in there. I know this is your podcast. I'm talking to you. But no, I just wanted to let people know what sticks in my mind about...
Was that in the States or in a state? Or was that both?
It was both. Because that trip actually went on to be... utter carnage that in was, places. Yeah.
that was Mexico for us,
like,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I'd just like to say now, before we move on, that there are rogue elements to Ollie, and he was a rogue element. Anyway, that's when we first met. But let's go back in time now to before that, and let's have a look at what was your early life like? What were you like as a kid?
I was a nightmare. there's no other single word for it. I was a nightmare. And it's not something I, you know, there's moments I laugh about it. There's other moments where I sit there and think, Jesus, you know, you don't realize the harm or the damage that you're doing, at the time, because you're selfish as a kid. But, looking back now, God, I would never want a kid like me. But yeah, I was a nightmare, and I got in a lot of trouble with the police, and caused mainly my mum a lot of stress.
I've met Ollie's mum. She's an absolute legend and probably one of the funniest people I've ever... That was Ollie banging the desk.
Sorry.
A desk that he built. But one of the funniest people I've ever met, and she can tell a story. She is much like Ollie Ollerton, and she can really tell a story. But mate, can you pick a couple of, not too long, but a couple of stories from your childhood?
I don't want to harp on about the negative side of things, but really, I do have problems, thinking back. My childhood is fraught with, just tragedy and stories of getting in, you know, accidents and... which, when you look back now, is quite funny. I mean, a lot of people will know that... You know, because I put it out there so much. But 10 years old, I got attacked by a chimpanzee at the circus, which was, you know, how the hell do you get attacked by a chimp at the circus in Burton-on-Trent in Staffordshire? You know, so that was the real start of my craziness, I suppose. I think I got, you know, I've still got, obviously got chimp in me, you can tell by looking at me. But, you know, that was the, you know, we went down to the circus one day, Burton-on-Trent, and boiling hot day, circus was setting up, and we asked if we could have a look around the animals. I then got separated from my brother and another lad called James, and found myself confronted by, well, there was a baby chimp on, you know, and I was fascinated. But then the mother of that chimp, obviously, to protect its own, ended up attacking me, and I nearly lost my life that day, which that was one story. And then they, you know, every year I felt so sorry for my parents. You know, we used to go on holidays, and it was always, you know, they must have been thinking at the start that I think they, you know, they not pack a load of clothes because they'd be packing bandages in the suitcases and stuff like that. But, you know, another time I come back and, you know, I can remember once in Lyme Regis, I came back, a little kid, just went off for a walk along on the pier or whatever it was, on the seafront, on seawall. And a big commotion, mum locks up, and there's me with a massive fishing hook in my leg, still connected to the fishing rod, which wasn't mine. So, I mean, me and my mum look back now, and we laugh, but at the time, it was just, you know, mum, it was just craziness. It's, you know, a little boy caused a lot of trauma.
Just to back it up here, there are a multitude of stories of Ollie when he's a kid, and they are hilarious. Mm-hmm. Now, looking back, and obviously I didn't know him then, but I know him very well now, I absolutely crease up. It's sometimes uncontrollable. There's we're not going to go into detail, but there's stories of sawn off shotguns. This is as a youth, by the way. And going back to the chimp story, there's a lot more to it. And I remember when I first got told that, I actually spent time perfecting that story to the point where I genuinely believe I tell it better than Ollie.
you do.
But there are some very nice people that are involved in that story as well that have come a long way and are still connected to Ollie because of that story.
Mm.
But anyway, that's that. And before we do move on, I'd like to know this one. Actually, it's a question that I've never really asked you. Were you an outdoorsy person from the off?
We were as a family. You know, we're always out. We're always outdoors. We always had dogs. And you know, every at least once a week, we'd be out on the hills.
Yeah,
with my dad. Well, with the whole family. So yeah, that was an important part of family life for us. Yeah, being outdoors, and you know, in those days, you know, we didn't have the tech that we've got today. But certainly, you know, that's one thing. I mean, that doesn't mean that you had to go outdoors. You know, some people, you know, that live in cities don't go outdoors and don't do stuff. But I'm so glad that we did that as a family. Yeah. You know, and it gave me a love for the outdoors. We, as kids, we were outdoors all the time, playing, you know, playing them up.
So, yeah. And your mum lives down in Curnow now, Cornwall. So she's remained an outdoorsy person as well, really, from what I can gather.
Yeah.
Mate, the military, it is a big part of anyone that has anything to do with it, to be honest with you. When did you decide that the military would be a good path for you? What was the decision making and the process?
Thing is, for me, when I look back, you know, I didn't think it was that profound that at 14 I was going to, you know, I made the statement I was going to join the Marines. And looking back now, you know, there's like my son, even when he was 18, he's still at the stage where he doesn't really 100% know what he wants to do. But at 14, you know, I'd gone through that troubled period. I got a real fascination with the military. There was a magazine out at that time called Combat and Survival.
I remember it.
Yeah. And that was really the ground. You know, I used to read that with a passion. I just wanted to be, there was something in me that just, what, you know, there was nothing else. There was nothing else that excited me, nothing else I wanted to do. So at 14, I can remember standing up in class, saying a few swear words to the teacher and saying, I'm off to join the Marines, on which he remarked, you haven't got the discipline, which I now totally agree with him.
As did all of your senior leaders, no
doubt.
Didn't
mean I couldn't do it. Just meant
No, hang on. We're coming on. Don't jump the gun. There's more to come. Mate, so the decision was made. You were now joining the military, and you did. You joined the Royal Marines. What did soldiering do for you as a person? And what would you say your particular areas of expertise were?
I don't know. It's I joined the military. What did it do for me? I think it reinforced what I'd already learned. You know, a lot of the stuff I've got now, which I'm really appreciative for, and a lot of it, probably my dad as well, you know, he was very, you know, we had a disciplined childhood, believe it or not. I think that's probably why I rebelled. But, you know, it really enforced that kind of way of life. You know, it's about being ready for everything, having your stuff squared away. You know, which for me, joining the military, that really enforced that, and I really enjoyed that. You know, it's like, you know, going to the jungle. I mean, a lot of people don't like going to the jungle, but I love the fact that, I mean, there's so much to take in the jungle. The actual, you know, your admin, your personal admin about yourself has got to be 100% squared away before you even think about your soldiering. You know, it's the full, it encompasses everything. So for me, it was like it brought out that quality in me that, you know, that had been instilled in me as a young lad. When it comes to areas of expertise, to be honest, when I joined the military, it was just, I didn't have any, when it came to the tech stuff and all that, like the signals, the communications equipment and things like that, I just didn't have the patience for it. I just want to be a soldier. I want to be out there on the front line. I just wanted to be in the thick of it. And that was it. Yeah. So,
I'm obviously a little bit younger than Ollie, and by about, I think it's 6 years.
6 years,
yeah. So when we first met, I was very young, actually. I was 20, and I'd been in the Marines not that long. I'm the same, I'd say. I'd much preferred the soldiering side of things. But Ollie did have a reputation. He did have a reputation in the unit. And if I'm honest with you, I looked up to him because his reputation was one of, yes, he was renowned for being a rogue element and enjoyed the good times, but he was an amazing soldier. And if there was nothing that Ollie couldn't do, you know, his physical prowess was good. His ability to soldier was brilliant. His ability to take on board new techniques with regard to whether it was climbing, whether it was different techniques that they used to get into different places or run over hills, you know, all the stuff that you think about and dedicate, you know, your thoughts about soldering to. Ollie was good, was good at everything, and I'd like to blow smoke up your arse there, mate, because that's true.
What a tear to my
which one? We'll round up on the soldiering side of things, because I know what it did for you. It gave you direction, but it also showed you that you didn't want to sort of remain in the military either, because there's a lot of stuff that goes hand in hand with time in the military, which it isn't great, and it doesn't give you freedom of movement. So how did you manage your life after the military? Now spend a bit of time on this, because I know there's an awful lot.
Yeah. It wasn't until I left that I realised how, and I say it again, I said it before, but the kind of structure, the scaffold that gave me in my life was really, really important. Because as soon as I left, and I really think at the moment, you know, the whole isolation, I relate a lot at the moment about, you know, people going into isolation. I think back to when I first left. When I first left and I came out and all of a sudden I was sat at home. And I didn't have my mates there. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything around me. I didn't have any structure. And that, honestly, people that are suffering at the moment with isolation, that is what it's like, as you all know, Foxy. That is what it's like when you come out. There's a massive void and you just don't know where. Unless you've got something that you, some kind of structure, something you've been working on before you even leave, you just don't know what to do with yourself. And I didn't know which direction. I was still quite young. I was 30 years old, and I just didn't know what to do with myself, and I kind of bounced around trying to reinvent myself. My one goal was to have my own business, but the thing is, you know, you've still got to pay the bills and stuff. So I ended up doing a load of stuff that I didn't really want. I said I wouldn't go back into or go onto the circuit, which I inevitably ended up doing,
which is the private contractor security work. That's what the circuit is.
Yeah. So I then came away from that, and I came away from the military, and I ended up in doing some stuff on the circuit. But I always had this passion that I wanted my own business. So that's always been the incentive. But the thing is with me, I've always had great ideas. I'm a creative person. So when it comes down to you know, running a business, it takes you to sitting down and running through the boring stuff. And I couldn't be bothered with that. I really couldn't be bothered. So although I had great ideas, it was very hard for me to execute anything. And that's why I ended up getting swallowed back in, because the pay is good on the circuit.
Was
good. That's where you always end up sort of getting pulled back into that way of life. I just like to say back, because we have conversations. I think about a lot about time in the military, and yeah. I also think, you know, and this is not just for the military, but this is certainly it for. I'm quite happy to say, although I'm so appreciative to what I achieved in the military, and it was amazing. It didn't fulfill me. There was something missing, and I couldn't work that out. And I thought, there was some kind of issue with me, but I didn't know what it was. And so for me, you know, to get to do the things that we used to do was amazing, absolutely. And you know, you couldn't pay to do this stuff now, but I would do if you could do, some of the things. But I think really for me, it's made me realize that you spend your life chasing a dream that is an image. Do you know what I mean? And that, for me, that image was being this special forces soldier doing all these cool things, jumping out of planes, going on ops, coming back, you know, and, you know, driving a flash car, you know, just this sort of James Bondy style life. And it's not the picture you should be chasing. You know, what we tend to forget is the feeling. You know, it should be how you feel, not how you look. So really, for me, I think about that a lot. And everyone chases that image, you know, whether that's the car, the house, the wedding, the kids, all that, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. And really, you know, it's not on the outside. You've got to look internally. So for me, you know, I left the military a little bit disappointed that I'd not found that in the military. So I was, the point I'm trying to make as well in that is that I came out, I was still searching.
Yeah.
massively searching and not knowing what was going to be that fix, whether I thought I would never find it. Going back to then being a civilian after 11 years military service, I found myself all over the place. And then 2003, the statue came down on Ferdos Square. I was doing a sales job at the time, believe it or not. I was trying to get into sales, learning negotiation, all that kind of thing, further enforcing my idea. I wanted to learn those skills for business. And then the opportunity in Iraq was just too good to turn down. Mm. And they were paying a lot of money back then, and coming from a military, and even to the civvy job that I was in at the time, I mean, the pay was massive. It was tax-free because it was a war zone. I mean, you just couldn't say no. You can't say no.
I'm just going to lighten the sort of leaving the military conversation a little bit, because Ollie did, like he alluded to, a few jobs, didn't really work out what he was doing, wanted to work for himself, but wasn't quite working out. But he picked up the nickname Ole Ollie. And it comes down to that. I'm not going to explain the story in detail because it's too long and it's not, you know, maybe Ollie doesn't want me to tell it. But
I don't mind, but it is too long for this.
He was selling orange juice machines that were slightly below standard, shall we say. And people might have been getting the odd mild electric shock. But anyway, that's Ole Ollie. We'll leave him there.
You leave them like that.
Mate, what's your outlook on life now?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My outlook on life is an extremely positive one. I am very focused, very disciplined, and very focused on where I want to be. I've learned a lot of things and not giving Billy a plug for his book, but the hard way. Mm-hmm. I've realized that one thing for certain, this is probably due to a recent experience, but I'm not doing anything. I know it sounds a bit weird, but I'm not doing anything for anyone else anymore apart from me. Mm-hmm. I've got to make sure that I'm 100% happy. I don't do anything anymore to impress people. So from the outside looking in, I've realized how important it is to project from the inside out. So I do everything. You know, I've obviously got a partner, and you know, which I'm soon to get married to. But I'm just extremely positive, extremely focused on helping other people, and making sure that's a part of my daily business practices. But it's about, I've created a job that doesn't seem like a job. Mm. I've created something that doesn't seem, I can't call it work. I get up every day and I'm excited to do what I do. So,
yeah, I'd like to back you up with a comment from myself here, and it is that everyone says that it sounds selfish to say you do stuff for you, but for me, you are born and you die with one person and one person only on this planet, and it's you. And to look after yourself and make sure that you are happy in turn means everyone around you will be the same. If you start concentrating on all the external factors and neglect yourself, things aren't going to be right. That's just something that triggered in me then as Ollie was talking. So there's my little rant and preach over with. We move on. Mate, you've already sort of mentioned it, but how do you manage your mind? And what does a good day look like for you?
A good day for me is let's talk about my morning routine, because that's really important for me. If I get my morning routine squared away, it doesn't really matter what happens that day, because I'm in a good frame of mind to deal with it. It's when the days that I let that slip that, you know, then things start to grow wrong, they multiply. But for me, a good day looks like get up early in the morning, 5 o'clock. I don't set the alarm clock, you know, because once you're in that pattern, you just get up at that time. Then it's downstairs for me. I like to spend some time meditating. When I say meditating, don't freak out. It's really, I've said this before, it's about, you know, it's about having some space, creating some clear clarity and space in my head, and think about the things that I want. So give yourself a little bit of feedback, and really set yourself up for the day. Then it's shortly after that, it's either a gym sesh or a run. And then that is then back. And then I'm back at the office. I like to sit down in front of the computer and look at going through my emails, maybe stuff I haven't dealt with from the day before. If an email needs to carry on the momentum of something, then I forward the email, reply to it. And I just go through that session, because between 7 and 8, your phone isn't ringing, you know. Between the only messages I get are from you anyway.
put the kettle on.
Put the kettle on. Even when you're not here though. Yeah. But yeah, it's real focused time to be able to set yourself up for the day, get everything squared away, and then 8 o'clock, I'm just ready for the day. I do like, you know, a lot of time I'm spending in the office, and although that is good, I'm not an office person. You know what I mean? It's not my comfort zone to sit there in an office all day, and I need to get out and do something different. And that getting out could be going out, doing a motivational talk for a company, doing whatever it is, or even going out onto the hills and getting some time. But I think the bottom line is to have variation throughout every day. You know, so you haven't got one set thing for the whole day. It's got. You know, variation. It's got, you know, it's there's a lot going on each day, and that's important.
Yeah, I agree. We spoke about it the other day, didn't we? We were talking about that morning routine and how, you know, it's basically battle prep, and the better prepared you are for battle, the better you're going to attack the day.
Yeah.
So that's that. Anyway, we're going to move on to something that I think a lot of people might be watching as well. We are, as we record this, we're one ep into the new Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins. There are some interesting characters. How did you find this one, mate?
I was really excited about it, because although, you know, looking back to when we did the filming, I did find that quite tough, you know, from our perspective.
Yeah.
It's a long time for us. You know, we're doing 18-hour days nonstop, and it's a good old slog by the time we're finished. And the celebrity version is the one we do at the end of the regular one. I felt they put it together great. I think there's some really strong celebrities on there, a really good mix. Yeah. I think they've put together is brilliant. I mean, I've got to say I'm being a bit biased here, but the interview with KP was absolutely gold. So that was my golden moment for the first ep.
Yeah, it was. That was, it's not scripted. We're not told this is who you're going to interview. It's literally like, right, we want you to interview some people who want to do it. And I think it just came about, you know, someone was like, yeah, I'll do him, I'll do her. And it was just me and Ollie did Katie Price, and we didn't know what to expect, but I tell you what, I walked out of that room, as you did, you know, because we discussed it, but I felt absolutely wasted.
Drained.
It was hard work. Mate, what's the difference for the DS? What's the difference between the celeb one and the normal one that we do?
The main difference for me is the fact that we haven't got a clue who the people are on the regular, if you call it the regular one.
Yeah.
And for me, that creates a bit more intrigue as to what makes these people tick. So, I mean, it's, you know, for that, you know, the normal one, it's, you know, there's a lot of hidden secrets, And sometimes you don't get to the bottom. You only find out afterwards. Sometimes a certain person, a candidate, ends up leaving, and then you find out from their backstory that there was something that we just didn't get to the bottom of. I mean, it's rare that happens, but, you know, we... And I think that's really interesting, because then you understand these people's motivation. I mean, we've had some life experience, obviously, and I think, every... At least something in the majority of everyone from that regular sort of SES Who Dares Wins,
yeah,
you can relate to in some, in a little bit or whatever. So that makes it intriguing for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think we have to work mentally a lot harder on the normal one, because we know nothing about them. And we really have to concentrate on digging deep and concentrating on them to actually find out and give them an experience that's worthy of turning up, I think. And that with the celebs, we don't need to do that as much, because, you know, as soon as those hoods are off, we already know a bit, and it's just a case of just digging in and whatnot, maybe. Who did you grow to like? There's one. And who did you find the most difficult? Without giving anything away, because this is gonna go out before the end of it.
I grew to like Joey Essex.
Agreed. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I just thought he was, you know, I mean, the thing is, I mean, one thing about that celebrity version, people have already boxed him up, and they've got, you whether you like it or not, you have a perception of who the person's going to be. And Joey was not the person I thought he was. Mm-hmm. Or the perception I had for Joey Essex is not the person I saw on that, SES Who Dares Wins. Yeah. So he was, and he's a likable character. Yeah. Obviously, but he's got a heart of gold, and I think he's a good all-round guy. And you can, from our point of view, you can imagine him in the service, can't you?
Yeah, you can, 100%.
Yeah, and it'd be a popular, obviously, with the ladies, but it'd be popular with the lads when he, like, just is a good lad.
Good morale as well, you know.
Yeah. And second question, who did I find
most difficult? Not the worst, but.
I have to say, for me, it was Fash.
Yeah.
Fash, and that's no disrespect to him. I couldn't get on a level with him in any respect.
I could never tell what was real and what wasn't.
Yeah.
There was a level there, which is fair play to him, because he delivers a persona and delivers it well. But I don't know whether anyone will know who the real Fash is.
No, maybe he doesn't.
Maybe he doesn't. It's like you back in the day.
Exactly.
Do you ever feel bad about putting the recruits through any of the challenges? What's the one thing you'd hate to do yourself? Now, just quickly, we do everything that they do. So, with regard to tasks, over to you.
I'll tell you what, everything that we ask them to do, I'm actually jealous when they do it. And I don't regret. Well, these are the tasks. You know what I mean? The one thing I do think, oof. And I wouldn't, is the beastings. That for me, because the tasks I think are brilliant, because those are almost like, you know, when you see someone that's working with heights, they're scared of heights, then all of a sudden you see them have a breakthrough. That's amazing, and that will last for the rest of their lives. But the beasting,
yeah,
I mean, that I look at them and I think, oh, surely, you know, sometimes I sit and think, did I really have it that bad? I know we did, but it's easily forgotten.
Mate, I agree with you, because obviously us as the DS, we get to demo certain tasks. We don't do, like, I don't do all of them. Ant doesn't do all of them. Ollie doesn't do all of them. So sometimes when you get to see the fact that the recruits get to do all of them, you're like, oh, I wanted to do that. Do you know what I mean? But the beastings are nasty.
Honking.
But I tell you what, I've got to say it. You get goosed on selection at
times.
Yeah,
absolutely. Beyond.
How much of a laugh is it for the staff? This is an easy question.
It is. It's amazing laugh. A lot of times we always have a laugh regardless. You know, even when it's, you know, we're absolutely knackered. I think they're actually the funniest parts, aren't they? You know, when you're absolutely in delirium state and you end up laughing about the most funny, but there is we have a great time. You know, there's no.
There are also strange times. I remember there was a time I had left. It was on the first series, and it was baking hot day in West Southern Wales. I'd actually just left this location to go and do something, and I came back, and me and you hadn't slept for over 24 hours.
Yeah.
And I'd come back, and Ollie had been waiting in a car park with some of the recruits, and there was some stuff going on, and he looked a bit delirious. And then there was this story of this vision that people saw, and it was of this woman pushing with one hand a buggy with her child in, and with the other hand, she was leading a horse at pace through a lane. She looked into where Ollie was, nodded, said hello, and just scarpered off. It was, and I remember
it was bizarre. It was almost like a window, because we were just looking out. We heard this clippy clop, and it was like a window between the bushes. So first of all, you see an extended arm with a pram, then you see a woman. You know, she's like almost in a crucifix kind of position, and she just comes past smiling. And then next thing, you see a horse. And it was like, everyone just looked at each other, and we were just like, did you just see what I just saw? it was just funny. So funny.
Right. We're going to start to wrap up. Not totally, but we're going to start to wrap up. Mate, what have you got going on now? What are you working on at the moment? Cause this is a big period for you coming up.
Yeah. Well, I've got my second book coming out called Battle Ready. So that's been a long time in the making. After my 49 years. So I've got Battle Ready coming out. Really excited about that, because when I look back, that book, the content really was sourced from when I put myself into isolation, and that's because I came back and the things that were going on in my head, the patterns of daily life, were not positive. So I knew I had to almost reprogram myself, and I put myself into isolation, so there was no distractions, no anything, and that's where a lot of the content for that book comes from. So it's really exciting to get that out there.
If you could in a very quick sentence summarize what that book is, what is it?
Right, I'll say in a quick sentence, right, and those I'll have to explain afterwards, but this book is a Haynes manual for the brain.
Right, there we go.
A Haynes manual for the brain. And those that are too young to understand that, whenever you used to get a car in the old days, everyone, you'd always get a Haynes manual, and it gave the layman an understanding of how it worked and some simple and basic things to be able to get it back on track when it stopped working.
That's an interesting analogy to your book, because it's actually sparked a little question in my mind. If your brain was a car, what would you... say it was, because I'll tell you what I think your brain is.
Oh, dear me. A Jaguar.
Jaguar. I'd have said the Morris Minor. I'm joking.
I was going to say the Imp.
With a G on the beginning. mate, anything else?
As you know, Foxy, we're working on, got a lot of stuff, the Battle Ready's brand. We're pushing through with our fitness app and loads of new stuff coming forward. And also the thing that's really exciting for the both of us is the Breakpoint Academy. So taking veterans, putting them through a 3-day course, and then we're working with a company called Orion Rail, who then supply workers for Network Rail. So we're essentially supplying veterans from the front line in a war zone back home and putting them back on as frontline key workers in essential services here today. So that's really exciting for us, and we've got a lot more work to do there.
It is, and Ollie's put an awful lot of work into that, I must say. Are you going to miss me once this lockdown's over?
100%. I'm not going to sit here and say I won't, because I will.
He's going to miss winding me up. Right, now, we're on to the reader's questions. Now, before this podcast yesterday...
I got away with it.
No. Before this podcast on social media yesterday, which is however many days ago when you actually hear this, I put out on social media that I required people to send in some questions that I can ask Ollie. There's been a lot. There's been an awful lot. And because it's the opening ep of season two, I'm going to basically pick three questions. So first up is a question from, on Instagram, West Coast Climbing. Mate, I've got to do a little bit of detail. It starts off as it does, but I'm going to twist it a little bit, and I'm going to I'm gonna steer you towards an answer, and you'll know what the hell I'm on about. So the actual question, before you answer, let me finish. The actual question was, ever had a really greasy haircut? Because then you could be called Oily Ollerton, which is quite funny. However, what I'll say is, have you ever had a really bad haircut?
Oh, and my
mean,
God.
I don't mean dying. I mean, think about a guy called Paul who you went to the hairdressers with.
Oh, I think we're having tech issues.
We're not, mate. Wait, explain away.
All right. So we were bored. Okay, I'll have to preempt you with that.
You and a guy, can I
me say and, me and a guy name? Called Paul Story.
There we go.
Yeah, Paul Story. Great awesome bloke. I used to live with him, actually, down in Poole when we were serving. And one day we said, we both had kind of really straight hair. I think it was actually, we'd seen Top Gun or something like that. Tom Cruise had this really nice little sort of wave in his hair. You know, it was just like a little wave. And it
was
just
looked really cool. Was it not called a demi-perm?
It was, well, we did a bit of investigating.
Yeah.
And we'd heard that what you could do to have that effect was a demi wave.
So anyway,
we went down to both of us sat in the hairdressers in Poole, bearing in mind this is like flooded with people from the camp walking around the quay down in Poole. And we thought you'd go down it just like a little machine, like a crimping machine, you know, it just give you that little wave. 10 minutes in, and we both sat there sweating our nads off because we've both got curlers in. Looking at each other, thinking, oh my God, please do not anyone walk in. And then I came out of there, honestly, and I looked like Shaun of the Sheep. I looked like a Scouser. no disrespect.
Back in the day
with a shell suit. But then the worst thing about that was, I mean, I was like, I've got to get home as quickly as possible. If anyone sees me, that is it. I'm going to get filled in. I'm going to, you know. But then it started raining, so... And the curls really tightened up. And it was like, honestly, and I spent the next 2 months trying to hide this perm.
It was like Monica from Friends when hideous. She was on holiday in the Caribbean.
And people used to say, have you had your hair? And I, no. It was like clearly obvious.
They got back, apparently, and they were there in utter terror trying to straighten their hair, like using anything. I think that even an iron might have come into it. Yeah. Right, mate, we move on to the second question. This one is from someone again on Instagram, and his handle is AD_Hiron. So it's AD_Hiron, spelled HIRONS. And he'd like to know, what is the funniest moment off camera that you wish had been caught?
Off camera? Off camera.
Well, stuff that didn't make it into the cut.
Oh, well, for me, straight away, it's the Kato bit.
This is on series 2, Ecuador in the Jungle. Explain.
Straight away. Well, we built this scenario. I mean, they did show the actual scenario on series 2, was it?
The scenario they showed, this bit they didn't because none of us could talk.
But basically, there was a building, it was on fire. We would bring the candidates up. They would be given a quick battle orders, QBOs, and they had to go into the building and see if there was any
survivors
and take appropriate action and not come through the same entrance as they couldn't come out the same entrance as they went in. So anyway, this was running through, and you know, some guys were getting this. You know, they would find the person and come out, and
there was a route that was obvious. The room was filled with smoke. I'm just going to fill in the blanks.
Yeah, no, dude, because you
there
tell
were
the story
there
about
were
that.
People in the building that were obviously there to be rescued. There was a hint in the set of quick battle orders that they were given. Did it in pairs. But then we wanted to see aggression as well. So at the end of the route, there was a door that needed bashing in. It was like a bit of plywood, needed a bit of aggression, a bit of oomph, and to get through it. So anyway, that's the blanks filled. Ollie, handing over.
So basically, you know, they did it in pairs, and you would expect it probably take about a minute, wouldn't it, before they actually got out the other side. So they were running through, and we'd give them a quick debrief. Yeah, that was good. Blah blah blah. Anything for us? But go back to your dorm. And then there was two lads. I can remember one. It was Andy. It was Gary.
Gary and Andy.
And basically, we saw them go in one side of the building. Then seconds later, they came flying through the plywood door so fast that there was the shape of a person coming through the plywood door. And we were like, oh, you know, they've done it so far. And they sort of landed on the other side. There's smoke everywhere. And they both like looked at each other, checked each other off and went, yep, good to go, and sprinted off
into the darkness without anyone.
We're like, stop, come back in. We're like, did you not see anyone?
It was honestly, you sort of, it's one of those you had to be there. But the way this guy came flying through that door, it was like, Keto! It was mental.
We were absolutely bits.
As a DS were rolling around all over the place, and these two poor lads who were recruits, who everything had been serious up until then, they just didn't know what to do.
Yeah, no, and they thought they'd done really well.
They did, and they got a massive bollocking once we'd actually composed ourselves.
So that wins that.
Right, the third and final question I'm picking out to be a winner is one from Brad Lewis 995. So that's Brad Lewis 995. He's come up with a question, which is, if you could teleport back to meet you as a 15-year-old, what would you say to him, that person? And I've got a little bit to twist on and add on to this after.
Slow down.
Really?
Well, I would. I'd say slow down and start. I do think about this a lot because it's a question that's come up a lot for some reason. I think the main thing I would do is first of all, believe in yourself. Never stop dreaming, but always have a plan. You know, have a plan. You know, I lived very much in the moment, which is great, but, you know, I just had no forethought for anything moving forward. So, you know, there's a few things I'd say, but it'd be really that. And just believe in yourself.
Yeah, that is a good one. Also, just quickly, I'm going to add on to Brad Lewis's 995's question. If you could teleport back to any time, what time would you teleport back to?
Oh, that's a tough one because I'm always going through scenarios. I'd love to, but definitely not when... it would be around the gladiator times.
Gladiator times. I can see you as a gladiator. Anyway, right, okay, that's good. Right, I'm going to mix it up a little bit before we say goodbye. And that is because there was a question. This isn't a winner, I'm afraid, so I'm really, really apologetic. But there's one question that is being asked, and I'm going to direct it at myself, and I'm going to answer it, but I'm not going to answer it fully. I'm going to answer it with a cryptic answer. Ollie's going to absolutely crease himself, and we'll leave it there. So the question was from The Travelling Bell on Instagram. And it is, what is the most awkward moment you've had together? And my answer is that moment involved a holy sock and a trailer park. And on that note, I'd like to say a massive thank you to Ollie Ollerton. He is a legend.
Thank you, Foxy. This has been awesome.
And what a way to kick off the second season of Wild Tales podcast. Mate, you're a legend.
Thank you very much, mate. Cheers, buddy.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Thanks very much to Ollie. I hope you enjoyed that. Now, if you want to find Ollie anywhere, you can find him on Instagram at ollie.ollerton. That's at ollie.ollerton on Instagram. Now, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already, and follow me and the Book of Man for the latest news. Thanks for listening. Catch you again soon. Cheers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.